What's up, iRaiders? Welcome to episode 13 of iRations, The Uplifter. My name is Drake Peterson, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is our weekly podcast. We are here on all podcast platforms every single week to raise your spirits, answer some questions, talk music, talk shop, and of course, talk all things iRation. Today's episode is all about the single Coastin', which just came out today. If you haven't heard the track yet, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, and all other streaming services. On today's show, we will have Micah Brown and Micah Puchel joining me for the Sample This segment, where we will take Coastin' apart and learn all about it. Then, later on, we will have the rest of the boys joining us to celebrate the release of Coastin'. But first, it's time for some news. In honor of Pride Month, the iRation Pride t-shirt is back on sale. This limited edition shirt features the iRation logo in a rainbow print. If you didn't get one last year, now is your chance to do so. But only a limited number of these are printed, so go get yours before they sell out. Go and visit store.irationmusic.com. And as I mentioned before, the newest single, Coastin', is out now. This is going to be the final single released before the album comes out on July the 10th. That's just 2 weeks away, y'all. Don't forget to pre-save or pre-buy the album on all digital music platforms. For more info and cool Coastin' bundles, visit irationmusic.com. Also, keep an eye out for the Move Forward lyric video to go along with this single that was dropped last week. Thanks for joining us today on The Uplifter. We hope you enjoy the show. It's now time for Sample This, where we take one iRation song and break it down. In this segment, you will be hearing samples and sound clips from the studio version of Coastin'. Joining me today are singer and guitarists Micah Puchel and Micah Brown. What's going on, boys?
Hello.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Happy release day yet again.
Oh, hey. Shoot.
All right, so let's get right into this song. Coastin' is a song about slowing down and letting the world and life come to you. Push, you want to talk a little bit about this song and the concept behind it?
Yeah, so kind of the original inspiration came from a trip that my wife Chloe and I and our dog Rolo took up to Mendocino. And we were looking for things to do, and there was this kind of trip that you could take on a canoe with your dog that was built for dogs to ride along on the canoe down the big river in Mendocino. And so, you know, we got a little heady, I would say, before we got on it. And you know, so it was a very relaxed trip down the river. I'll just say that. And when we were going downstream, we were paddling, and we were kind of like figuring it out and trying to, you know, steer it. You steer with your feet and all that. Rolo's kind of freaking out. We're starting to kind of sink into the mood of the whole trip. And we were both just kind of on edge a little bit, like trying to get our bearings. And then eventually we kind of just let the river just kind of start to take us. And we just started floating down the river downstream, and it was kind of this nice flow. And then once we stopped paddling, and we just started letting the river push us down, we started to hear all these crazy sounds, birds, animal sounds. Chloe still swears to this day that she heard a mountain lion. Then, like seconds later, an otter popped up next to us. And just like right next to us in the river, and just like looked at us, and we're like, holy crap, that's so sick. Like otter right next to us. And then like 10 minutes later, a giant seal just came flying up next to us onto a log, and like just jumped out of the water onto this log and was just like perched on the log and stared at us. And we were like, you know, this is amazing. And it was just like, the whole feeling was that as soon as we just stopped worrying and paddling and kind of go, just let the river kind of take us, all the animals started to kind of like say hello, come out of their, you know, shells. You know, we didn't stand out as much as like foreigners, and we felt like more of a natural thing. So that was kind of the whole vibe of that song came from, was just letting the stream kind of take you you know, and going with the flow of things, I think is the general feeling behind Coastin.
What was the demo like? Was it just guitar and vocals, or was there some beats by Mr. King David?
Yeah, I think the demo is actually pretty close to what the tracked song sounds like, just because we had this demo. Dave, you know, made a beat around it. It was really lush, had this kind of programmed drum feel to it, you know, 808, stuff like that, that kind of had this big, groovy, lush vibe sound. And when it came to, I think we tried to cut live drums to it. And when we did, it lost a little bit of that feel that I kind of really liked about the demo. And so we just kind of decided to stick with that sound. And we did obviously track over the top of it, but it actually was very close to what the demo sounded like, just kind of in general.
Yeah, I'm going to solo some of the drums here, and it's very, very 808. MB, do you want to explain what an 808 is for our listeners?
An 808 is just a kind of like a drum machine that you can use samples to make beats, and there's bass, there's sub-bass settings, so it's something that was often used in the hip-hop world, especially like in that 90s, 2000s era of hip-hop is when it really got a lot of popularity and a lot of music and songs you've heard. But basically just another way to produce a beat, and all kind of an all-encompassing piece of gear that does a lot and goes right into the computer. So samples, beats, bass, cool sounds, very hip-hop and R&B oriented. But I think the cool thing about Coastin is, yeah, it's kind of a cross-up of that vibe along with, you know, some acoustic guitars and some more folkier elements, I guess you could say, that like there's like a cool cross section of those tones finding a place in the middle that make the song unique, you know?
Yeah, and a bit of a reggae pocket as well. I think it's, you know, it's got totally a bubble and a bubble, yeah, on it, and
organ,
you know, it's kind of a very much an Iration song in that way, especially in this, for this record. It kind of fits, it is, makes sense that it's the title track, because it is kind of an amalgamation of all the things that we did on this record with, as far as sounds go and styles.
Oh, and thematically as well, you know, not just sonically, but lyrics wise too. I think it definitely drives home the overall message of just finding beauty in the world around you and being a positive, having a positive outlook and just pushing forward. And yeah.
And I also think it has to do with the fact that, you know, we've talked about the album being a bit of a musical journey. You know, we talked about the track listing and the way that the songs flow, and the way that we kind of have avenues of styles, and the, you know, imagine that you put it on and take a drive down the coast, you know, literally coasting as well. And it all just works together, I think. So I think Coastin' the song is a good starter just to kind of get you into the mood of what the rest of the album kind of holds.
Let's not also forget about King David's snaps. I can pick out his snap from anywhere, because he used the same one, I think, in Fly With Me and some other tracks. Do you know where he gets that snap? Is that one that he made himself?
I think it's an 808.
Is that an 808
sound?
Snap?
I think so. Yeah. He has a ton, though. I mean, there's obviously, when you say 808, there's a lot of patches that are, you know, they have newer sounds that come out and you know, that branch out from those, you know, standard 808 snaps. And he does a lot of layering as well, where he'll put sounds on top of other sounds to make them kind of fuller, and he'll tailor them so that they're not just stock sounds, you know, that you could just pull out of a bank.
And yeah, we'll sometimes layer, like I know we've layered live snaps too from the vocal booth on top of his samples, and to get a unique sound as well.
I want to talk about guitars. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4 different guitar stems in this overall track. MB, can we talk a little bit about your acoustic guitar riff at the end?
Yeah, it was just kind of on the spot. The song was looping in the studio. We were kind of putting two pieces together, and it had a very bare outro, you know, and it was a riff that I was thinking might work even as the post-chorus, but I think the post-chorus already had enough going on with the kind of the harmonies, the vocal, the ah, you know, like that post-chorus vibe. So it ended up just being the outro only, which I think is cool because I think there's something to be said about having songs that have things that only happen once, like a really cool vibe that just happens once instead of overdoing it and repeating it and putting it in too many places. And that makes the song very repeatable sometimes, you know? And I think that was a lot of the times when we're building a song, it's like, how do we make it so that the listener hears it and wants to just push replay right away, you know? And so that was kind of the idea with this one, is a pretty short, catchy riff that fades out quick and only happens once in the song, and it kind of makes you want to just start it over.
What kind of guitar were you using for the, what kind of electric guitar were you using for like the chanks?
I used, I think I used the Tele that I kind of brought for this whole album. It's like a thin line Telecaster with 10 gauge strings. So they're thinner strings, so it has a little bit more of a cuts through with the treble a little bit. But there was also, I know that there was a Les Paul involved. I don't think I used Les Paul on this song though at all. I think it was mainly the Telecaster and the Taylor acoustic.
Can either one of you just explain the technique behind a chank that you can hear in pretty much any Iration track?
Yeah, I think it's the standard reggae rhythm that kind of originated. It kind of comes from earlier than that. I mean, reggae music comes out of from Motown and from the earlier sounds of American music, and they kind of used it to put that backbeat on it, and it's basically a muted downstroke. So it's, a lot of people want to think that it's an upstroke, but it's actually just a muted downstroke. You kind of mute it with your palm, your right palm, and or your left palm. It's kind of a mixture of both. It's like you mute with the hand that you're fretting with, and then you also kind of mute with your right hand that's hitting the string. So it kind of gives it, it's more, it actually acts more of a rhythmic thing than it does as a tonal thing. There is a slight tone to it, obviously, because you're fretting a chord, but it's more of a, it almost acts as a percussive thing, you know, in the grand scheme of reggae, where it kind of is just this, you know, sound, and it has maybe a slight tone to it where it's like, drink, 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 drink. And if you listen back to a lot of old school songs and Motown and R&B stuff from the 50s and 60s, you'll hear a lot of that. You know, you'll hear these chink, 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 you know, but it's kind of in a different pocket. And a lot of that was just because the reggae artists were learning from rock steady music. They were learning from that kind of ska sound, which is the chink, 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 where it's a lot more prevalent. And then they weren't trained musicians. So a lot of them were just kind of making it up as they go and going with feels. And then it was on this opposite, these opposite beats on the two and the four, as opposed to the one and the three. So it's just, it's really interesting. I mean, that's a whole nother story, maybe diving into the origins of reggae music, but yeah, it's a little bit more of a difficult technique than it seems like it is. It kind of takes a lot of people longer to kind of figure out how to really get the tone right. And like everybody sounds different when they play it, because it's just totally about how you interact with the guitar, you know, how your fingers fret, you know, what kind of strings you're playing, what kind of guitar you're playing, et cetera, amps, all that stuff. So it really does have every artist really has their own, you know, tonal sound to it, although it's not a very like flashy thing.
Pooch has super tight chinks for sure. But thanks. Yeah, just to go off of that too, I remember hearing a story about the Wailers, and going back to your point about Motown and doo-wop and taking those influences from that 60s sound. And then just flipping the rhythm, and it was almost like one of those happy accidents where they were writing, and instead of doing those percussive slaps with the snare drum, like in a doo-wop song, it was like in between the snare drum hits, and it was causing this kind of counter rhythm, which is kind of like what a bubble does as well on the keys, but it just opened up this whole new world, you know, of rhythmic opportunities. And that's kind of the start of what modern reggae was, you know, is kind of just exploration.
Happy mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What documentary was that? Cause I've heard that exact same thing. Is that something on Netflix?
I don't know. I don't remember where I heard
there's,
that. But.
I mean, there's a few. You could watch. There's a classic albums on Catch a Fire that's really interesting if you go back and watch that. And then there's actually a documentary called Catch a Fire about Bob Marley and the Wailers that's really, really good. If you really want to delve in, those are really cool.
I want to talk about the form of this song. It starts with a chorus, then goes into the verse, and then eventually there's no bridge in this song. Is that correct?
It's a bridge slash outro kind of deal.
Little outro.
Yeah, that's kind of, like I think there was discussion of like that outro acoustic riff that we were talking about being where the bridge would go and then going back into the chorus. But it was kind of like, we all liked the song really short, you know. I think it's one of the shorter songs on the album, and you know, it's short and sweet, and then you want to start it over. So I think it didn't really need a bridge. I think all the parts, verse, chorus, post-chorus, and outro are all the same chord progression. So there's no chordal changes in the song. It's kind of just a straightforward, you know, driving kind of song in that sense. And so, yeah, it's like you don't always need to reinvent the wheel or overthink things. Sometimes it's just keeping it simple makes it really cool. And we put more time into kind of the dynamics of those four chords as the song progresses and adding little things and elements, little counter melodies and things like that, just to make it cool.
And just a side note, just with the chords that, you know, MB mentioned the chords. The chords are actually, they're the chords for Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan. So which is like an interesting side note. We wrote with Charles Brotman years ago, like learning how to, and he always thought like those chords, and we were trying to write a song to those chords. And at the time I was kind of like, those are kind of like weird reggae chords. Like we were really more into like just doing a straight, you know, two chord or three chord thing that was a little bit more, you know, traditional. And for years I've like played those chords and tried to come up with something that made me feel like felt right as a song. And so when we had this one, it kind of, you know, it brought those chords back up again and gave them to Dave. And for me playing it on the guitar, you know, it's like I get locked into this one sound and the way that I'm fretting the chords and the way that I'm, you know, doing that. And then when I give it to Dave and he's on the piano, he can really voice them in different ways to make the chords fit together in a way that it allows you to open up the top line melodies and hear different melodies and hear different kind of flows with the sound of the song. And so I think that was another kind of interesting tidbit, is like basically the chords are kind of lightly ripped from Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan.
Yeah, it's a cool progression because it's major, minor, major, minor.
And it goes right down, half, like right down. It's really, they're weird. Like you wouldn't think that they, you know, would work like that, but they do.
But yeah, to Dave's credit, he definitely has a cool way of coming up with different voicings for chords. And it, for me, a lot of the times it unlocks like it's almost like an aha moment. Like, oh, those two chords are very close to each other, even though like we may play them differently on the guitar. I think it's always made me want to learn more about the piano, because sometimes it's like, it sounds way simpler on the piano than it sounds on the guitar. And it's like, oh, that's very interesting. So it's cool working with him because he definitely has a whole nother viewpoint and outlook when he's playing chords and figuring out progressions, and it works well with like the different kind of take that we have.
It makes it a lot easier to write top lines just because he can give you different voicings and different ways to move through the chords. And you know, if it's a three chord song, it doesn't necessarily sound like a three chord song because the way that he's moving from chord to chord.
Yeah, when you voice a chord differently, sometimes you can add dissonance and sometimes you can even take away dissonance, and it's right. Like, oh my god, this is it's the same chord, but it sounds completely different.
Yeah, exactly.
MB, do you want to talk any more about the guitar stuff on this one at all?
Yeah, I think just you know, I think we wanted to keep the first part of the song really stripped with guitar. It's kind of just rhythm and those chinks we're talking about and the sub bass and the beat. When verse two comes around, we start adding layers. We started adding some kind of like finger pick, like single note picking and like percussive strums that kind of accentuate the beat. And that was really what I was trying to do, was just accentuate the beat with different tones and using a little bit of like that classic reverb-y, Fender-y kind of tone that goes back to that doo-wop Motown kind of sound, and but also putting a little bit of, you know, my take on it and a little bit more of a modern contemporary vibe on it. So kind of mixing those two together and just layering some cool sounds to make the dynamic lift after that first chorus, and then having it all kind of come together at the end, and then adding that little riff on the top at the end, so that it's just kind of slowly the song's just kind of, the dynamics are lifting as you go. And it's, even though it's that one chord progression all the way through, it has a lot of dynamics.
I just think that on this album, in general, we really focused on pushing ourselves out of the comfort zone with structure. That was kind of a big thing with us, is the songs are not structured like we typically like to structure a song, or that normal songs are generally structured. I think we forced ourselves to kind of push into a world of song structure that's outside of our normal comfort zone. So it's not just, you know, an intro, verse, chorus, bridge, outro or chorus, and then done, or, you know, verse, pre-chorus. It's like some of the songs are like verse or hook, verse, chorus, or then like another verse and then a chorus and then an outro and that's it. Or, you know, there's pre-chorus on this one, and then, you know, or the bridge is a pre-chorus, or the bridge is the bridge is the outro, or you know, and then we're bringing the pre-chorus back in certain points, like on Right Here Right Now, for instance. We did the pre-chorus on the first verse, and then we don't do it again until the third verse. So it's like, and we skip the second verse. So there's just little Easter eggy type things if you're listening, to keep the songs just kind of interesting and surprising always, and not just falling into like a specific pattern that makes you kind of, you know, what's going to happen next. You kind of, oh wait, I didn't expect that to happen again, or that just doesn't happen again, or we go to an outro, or we go to a bridge and then it just doesn't go back to the hook and it just kind of tails off. So I just think that one of the big things with the album was trying to keep the songs fresh and keep them interesting and keep the listeners slightly off balance.
Yeah, sometimes it's more interesting to do something that doesn't necessarily make sense or would be like, what is the right thing to do, but it sounds better. And it's like, sometimes rules are made to be broken in that way. And I think that's what makes each song cool, is because you're catering it to the specific need of that song instead of just sticking to like what's kind of the norm or like what would be expected of you to do in that situation. It's like, kind of, you throw that to the side sometimes if you know this is going to work better, you know? And so I think it was always first and foremost, like, what's going to work better for this song, as opposed to like, what's the classic, like, you know, consensus on what to do in this situation, you know?
Right. And ignoring timestamp, like, oh, the song's only 2 minutes and, you know, 20 seconds long or whatever. It's like, who cares? Or the song Right Here Right Now is 5 minutes. Like, we don't care, you know, trying to fit a song in between that sweet spot of like 3 minutes and 4 minutes. Like, we just got rid of that whole kind of thing and just said, you know, let's just have fun with it and just see what, you know, comes out. And some of the songs are in the 2 minute to 3 minute range, and some of the songs are in the 5 minute range. So,
yeah, with radio being phased out and, you know, all these streaming services being more at the top, you don't really have to have, there's no time limit that's, you know, needed anymore, right?
Yeah, either way. I mean, there's no time limit on the short side or the long side, but I think it just comes back to doing what feels right for each song individually. So,
one of my favorite things about being in the writing room with you guys is you guys have this line that you say pretty much, I probably heard it at least 20 times within a couple hours, and you said, can we beat it? Can we beat this? Can we beat this? And that seemed to be your guys' motto every time there would be, whether it's a lyric or, you know, a part, musical part. Who started that? Can we beat it?
Michael Jackson beat it. No. I think it was like between, yeah, Dave and us too. It was always like, that was the goal, is like, if we're going to lay an idea down, you know, we didn't have to dwell on it too long. It's kind of helps us get out of our heads of trying to perfect something in the moment and spending way too much time on one idea. It's like, let's just lay down what we have. And then if we don't like it later, let's beat it later. Or if, you know, this is the day that we're going to beat that idea that not all three of us were, or not all six of us were super stoked on, you know, it's like, okay, then let's change it or make it better. And I think that
it's a pretty common songwriting, you know, trope, is just like, can you beat it? You know, is this the best that we can come up with? And I think that's just a good question to ask yourself in general about anything if you're creating. You know, it's pushing yourself to really be self-critical and look at yourself from the critical point of view and from try to get outside of your own, you know, closeness to the song and say, like, is this the best we can come up with? And I think Right Here, Right Now is a perfect example of that, because we, you know, I think MB and I came up with like two different hooks for that song and top lines. And then we kept listening to it and we're like, I think we can beat it. We were both just like, we know we can beat this. Like, it's not 100% yet. And then we came back and did a third time. And that's when we came up with that Right Here, Right Now, hook line. So it's just a good tool, I think, is what it is. And it's a good question to just consistently ask yourself when you're creating, especially when you're writing songs. We did it a lot, you know, with the guys, when we had the sessions with everyone together, it's just like we come up with lines and everybody's kind of spitting out lyrics and spitting out ideas. And it's like, you know, I think it, when you hit the right one, I think everyone kind of is like, oh, you kind of know in your, you know, in your gut, that's the right, you know, term, or it just feels right.
Yeah. And it's good to set your ego aside sometimes too, because there's definitely been times when we've all been like kind of digging in on something we think is the best idea, but it's like, if you really just set that aside and be like, okay, give it a chance to be beat, or give it a chance to like take another stab at it and see if we can do it better the next time. I think that's definitely something I've learned working with these guys, is like, because I came from my own world where I'd never really co-wrote with anybody except for Lewis Richards at 17th, but he was always giving me like all the leeway on lyrics and stuff, and he was more just about chords and beats. But you know, any lyric and or any part of a song is always up for debate and always up for improvement. And we always, there's another saying that we had doing the last couple of records, which is, what would Tom Petty do?
WWTPD, man.
Cause yeah, he's just
RIP.
He didn't always do what was like the commonplace for a lot of songwriters. He did his own thing. And it's like, would this be cool enough to stand alone as like just a cool song, like genre aside and what like is expected aside, like, is this just cool, you know?
Yeah. And I think he said so much with so few words. I think that's what it comes down to, is like, we really try to be economical with the words that we're using. And he was able to say incredible amounts with two lines. You know what I mean? If you go back and just read his lyrics, you're going like, what? Like, how he just says, you know, these two lines, and it just makes you go like, you see the whole, it paints the picture. You understand exactly the vibe, it sets a tone. It's just incredible. And that's what he was a master of doing. And I think that's what we, when we say that, it's like us being like, well, how can we say this in the least amount of words and still, you know, stay in that, you know, that world and really paint the picture.
Without being too cliche or leaning on like a lot of the basic kind of tricks that a lot of people use.
Yeah. Try not to use like or as. Mm-hmm. That's my kind of like harp thing that I do, is like, we try not to do the metaphors and similes too much.
Yeah.
So talking about Easter eggs, King David has a lot of little Easter eggs in this track, a lot of little sound effects. On the post choruses, he's got an orchestral section, like right when you guys are all singing the word "ah," I think is what you're saying. And I have a little bone to pick with KD,
because
he's got some fake horns in here that that he had buried, and
he always likes to sneak a couple of those through just to spite you.
Drake didn't know until he got the tracks.
He didn't know.
He's like, wait, I didn't hear this. There's that other one too. It's like, woo, or something like that. Kind of like a whirly-do kind of sound.
So, you know, that actually was...
I have that. I found it. I was like, what the fuck is this?
So, a lot of those Easter eggs, we started doing those things in the beginning, which was in a lesser way, but Electricity, the song starts with the voice going, Electricity, and actually that was Adam. We made Adam get in the booth and do that and just say Electricity like a robot, and then we kind of like tweaked his voice to make it sound, you know, that way. But I think that we, you know, in the last two records especially, have really tried to make a point of putting stuff into the songs that makes it so that when you listen to it like the 10th time, you hear something and you're like, wait a second, like, what the hell is that? I always thought stuff like that was really cool. Listening to song, you know, especially like songs like the Beatles and stuff, where you hear something on like the 20th listen that you didn't hear the first, you know, 19 times, that you're like, holy crap, that's so sick. And so that sound, that wee, those are just me. I think when I cut vocals, we usually cut the vocals and we come back afterwards and I'll do some ad-libby stuff, and add stuff and add little doubles or add things that are like little noises or sounds or, you know, and so that was just me going, I think I went woo like that. And then Dave will take it and put all kinds of weird shit and make it sound really
tweaky,
funny and like tweaky. Yeah. But yeah, there's all kinds of stuff like that throughout the whole album. So, I mean, if you're, as a listener, it makes it interesting for multiple listens and not just, you know, one time.
Not all of them always make the final track either. I know there's been versions of past songs that had some pretty funny things that were like, yeah, we probably got to take that out, but it was fun to listen to.
It'll live for a while in the demo, and then eventually you get to the point where you're like, yeah, I think that probably needs to just go. Like, sexy time. I think there was like a Borat drop on Zen Island for a while before it went to the sax.
Yeah, I remember that.
He was like, sexy time.
And yeah.
Right before the solo hits.
Dave was so excited when he showed that to me. He just had the biggest smile on his face.
And I was like, eventually we were like, yeah, Dave, I think we gotta have to gotta pull go. That Borat drop.
We'll wait for the producer's cut to come out later in 10 years.
The box set with all of the additional funny sounds.
So yeah, I think we did. Kaysen did cut on the Grand and the Hammond B3, and I think Dave maybe had some keyboard sounds that were in there from the demo that we kept as well, that were organ sounds. But yeah, I think whenever we track it, sound design in Santa Barbara, they have a really awesome grand piano and a Hammond and Leslie that we try to really utilize just because they sound so great. And I think they really lift the vibe of a song. So,
all right, gentlemen, well, thank you for joining me. Now joining us are bassist Adam Taylor, keyboardist Kaysen Peterson, and drummer Joseph Dickens. What's going on, boys?
What a do.
Hey.
And animal.
Aloha.
Adam and Joe, I saw you guys were in a forest of ganja the other day. Can you give us the scoop on that? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how stoned are you right now?
Wait, what? I don't remember the incident.
80.
Yeah, it's our buddy's farm up in Buellton. We've got some things that may be coming soon to a market near you, so keep your ears and eyes to the ground. And we were enjoying some of nature's finest. It was awesome.
Fire.
Yeah, it was fire.
Since this episode, sorry, I got lost. Joe, my place.
What is this guy's deal?
What is this guy?
Jody.
Since this episode is all about Kaysen and Iration has been Kaysen all over the world playing music, let's find out about some of the best venues. What is everyone's favorite venue to play at? And there's only one stipulation: you're not allowed to say Red Rocks, because that is everyone's stock answer generally. Poosh, let's start it off with you.
Ooh, well, if I say Santa Barbara Bowl, I'll probably just step on everyone else's toes. So I'm gonna outlaw that one too. I'm gonna say my favorite venue. I would say right now it's probably St. Augustine, just because the level of the crowd is so fire. The crowd was the last tour we went on there. It was amazing. The crowd was by far the loudest crowd, most energy that we had the entire tour. Sold out show, big tings right next to the beach. So, you know, we love being in that area of the country just because we have the Mons crew. Shout out to the Mons family. They take the boys surfing on the boat. The beach is accessible by foot, and we generally get to play some golf there at TPC Sawgrass. So, yeah, we have a lot of friends and good friends that are there. The No Laying Up boys are there. John Tom can make it there generally. So just a lot of good friends and crew in that area, and the shows are fire, and the weather's good. The food's good at the venue. Sounds good. All good things, yeah. St. Augie, shout out.
Last time we were there, Adam got in trouble for picking up a tortoise. Do you remember that, Adam?
I believe it was a snapping turtle, actually. It was in the middle of the road, and we were riding our bikes to the beach, and I just figured because there was cars coming, it was kind of in danger. So I picked it up to move it, and the ranger was coming and said, don't do that. Big ticket, but obviously no ticket, and just we got learned on picking up a turtle.
Adam, what is your favorite venue to play at?
A few come to mind right off the bat. I love Les Schwab in Bend just because of the float. But I'm going to go with, a lot of these actually come from Live from Paradise Tour 2019. Five Points Amphitheater in Orange County. The same thing. The crowd was huge, biggest show of the tour. That weekend in general, I think, because we played Del Mar right after, because I think Micah put my baby photo on the windshield of the bus that was in the crowd. But yeah, 5 Point Amphitheater, Del Mar would probably be my two favorites.
Micah Brown, how about you?
Let me see. I think one that always kind of comes to mind is the Greek Theater in Berkeley. The vibe. Mm. The vibe is unlike any other. Just the way the crowd is set up, it's like more of a vertical seating so that even people in the way back on the grass on the top are still somewhat close. For how big it is, it's very intimate. The backstage area is awesome. Like there's the string lights in the patio and it's a good hang. You know, there's always a lot of friends there and the green rooms are always, the catering's always fire. The green rooms are nice and spacious and comfy and a lot of space to entertain your friends and family. And the vibe on stage is, like I said, it's pretty much hard to match because I don't know what it is about just the close proximity of that many people kind of giving you the energy back. I think that's definitely, those times we've played there have been some of my all-time favorite shows.
Giant bowl there. Like the floor area is huge. I think that's another reason why it's awesome.
That's also where I kicked a soccer ball pretty hard right into your crotch. Now that I think about it.
I was just thinking about that. Every time someone brings up that theater, I'm like, ugh, it
MB,
hurts.
You described your performance there as being akin to Russell Crowe's performance in the movie Gladiator, the opening scene. Am I correct?
Of course, yes.
Are you not entertained?
Everybody was entertained. Let's just put it that way.
Shout out to the coffee bar too. There, that's another.
Oh yeah, they have a barista on always, and
you barista can get there.
Popsicles
at St. Augie's. Yes.
Oh yeah.
All your Niner gang always come out to Greek Berkeley too, right?
Yeah, Niner boys, Niner gang, bang bang.
We should get them on the show. That could be fun.
We will. Yeah, Joe's retired now, so. We're getting Joe and McGlinchey on. That'd be fun.
How about you, Joe? What's your favorite venue to play at?
Well, Poosh got me with St. Augustine. Well done. Beautiful and fun. But I'd have to say after that would be Greenfield Amphitheater, North Carolina. That place is so fun. It's like a tiny little amphitheater, super intimate. Crowd always goes nuts. There's like an alligator filled like pond in the back. I don't know. It's just good times. We always have
fun
there. Is that
Green Lake Amphitheater?
Or is it Green or Lake?
Greenfield? I think it's Greenfield.
I think it's Greenfield.
Is it Greenfield? Oh, you're right. Okay. Maybe I just think lake because there's a...
There is a lake. I think it's Greenfield Lake Amphitheater, honestly. I think it's both.
It is Greenfield Lake Amphitheater in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Micah's eyes have never truly recovered from that. Hmm.
My irises were scarred.
Great story.
Well, it's nice. It's always nice coming to Wilmington with the mayor himself, you know, to put on a nice show for the locals.
Here, MB. Thank you.
If you've ever had toxic like metal cleaner and bird shit pouring into your eyes for like an hour, it's not pleasant.
Yeah. Also, the only show we've ever played in the middle of a hurricane downpour.
I don't know. I was completely dry. So was Kaysen. So was Joe. We were fine.
I was loving it, yeah. Actually.
I was not.
Kaysen, how about you?
I'm drawing from some more Live from Paradise shows because that was probably the most fire tour that we've gone on so far in our careers, in my opinion. So from that, yeah, I liked Pier 17 in New York. That was super cool. It's right out there on the pier, and you got the city as your backdrop, and it's just a super cool venue. So like show wise, that was probably a good one. And then as far as activity wise, I would say, was it the Botanical Gardens in Boise, Idaho?
Boise, yeah.
Because the stage is in the Botanical Garden, and the Botanical Garden has all these different exhibits, different gardens, all sorts of animals. We walked to a river, did some floating, and did a little nature show, a little David Attenborough nature show with our videographer, Sean. That was fun.
Check it on YouTube, y'all.
Check it out.
Check it on YouTube.
The people watching was all time at that show.
Yeah, the bus.
You could watch the whole crowd from the bus, too. It's really fun.
People watching, crucial entertainment for us when it's pre-show.
I will say, too, that was probably one of the best catering experiences, too. It was fire.
Yeah, it was all like organic, fresh produce and healthy.
Yeah, and it was set up outside in the like Zen garden.
Loved it.
Jumped off a bridge. Waded in the water. It was a really nice day all around.
Can I wade in your water?
How about you, Drake? What do you got?
I am a huge fan of Texas. I am obsessed with Texas, and I love Florida. And this past tour, Live from Paradise, I got to play at Stubbs for the first time, and I have a lot of friends and family that are out there. So I think that's one of my favorite places to play, because the energy, I mean, when we played there, it was like completely packed house, and just had a nice day around the town. And I just enjoy the vibes in Texas. So I'd say that's probably my number one. And number two, I think was New York, where we played last. That was unbelievable. Just, you know, on stage, you can literally just see the Statue of Liberty and, you know, World Trade Center. And then if you turn around, you just see the Brooklyn Bridge and, you know, all of Brooklyn, and it was insane.
I want to add one of my other favorites that we have only done one time was when we did that venue in Portland, Maine, on the pier, where we played at the end of the pier, and you faced towards the land, and like it was a beautiful day. It was on the Stupid Tour, and there's like boats floating by you on the ocean. It's this beautiful, you're playing that basically out in the water. Yeah. The food is incredible in Portland. I said Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
But you saved it. Really.
But I saved it.
Save.
Yeah. I turned it around. They'll never know. Nobody from Portland.
How did
listening.
You save that, Micah?
I was like, brilliant. Portland. I was like, I think I said Portland, Oregon or something. I was like,
doesn't compare.
Many people say Portland, Oregon is the real Portland, but I heard Portland, Maine is the original or something like that. I just flipped it around, and everybody was like, at first they booed, and then they were like, when I flipped it around, they were like, ah! I was like, holy crap. I just turned around and looked at the guys. I was like, holy crap. Like, just pulled that out of my ass.
Have you done that anywhere else? I mean, it's hard when you're in a different city every night,
you know,
especially if you're
I didn't do it for a long time. And Kai did it one time in Austin. I think he said he called Austin like Dallas or something like that, and got booed. And so we like gave him shit about that for a long time. And then it didn't happen for a long time. And then we played, I think we played Spokane right after we played Boise. And
it was
they're both
knitting factories.
Yeah. It was knitting factories, and they're both knitting factories. They're both kind of up there in the Northwest. And I think I called Spokane Boise or Boise Spokane, one or the other. Like I flipped them around and got a nice little boo for that. But you know, whatever. You live, you learn. Your brain's fried. At that point in the tour, your brain's like fried anyway. So.
Those Texas House of Blues venues, yeah, you do like a string of three House of Blues shows in a row. It's sometimes, yeah, it's hard to differentiate between the two. So like same thing with the knitting factories. It's, you got to be on point or have the city on your set list or something.
We did a tour. The first tour we did at Playboys in Paradise with Pepper and Red Eye Empire. They did it. Red Eye Empire did that like seven times on the tour because they never toured. So they were like, that was like their one tour a year that they did. And they would go on stage, and they're from Canada too. So they probably didn't even know half the cities that we were playing at on the tours. They did it like seven times. They'd come on stage and be like, hey, what's up, Houston? And we're in like you know, Arizona or something. Everybody's just like, dude, what? Like, what are you talking about? They got booed so many times and we're just in the audience like,
not even Trevino close. Face.
Yeah, no, bro.
It's funny, fun fact. I actually saved a couple of these, but I used to write on Kai's set list, "You are in Columbus" in Sharpie next to it. And I would do a smiley face and I'd say, "Remember to smile, music is fun." And I saved a couple of them just because, you know, we were getting into that point where, you know, everyone's getting eggy, forgetting where you are. But I'll post on our story if I can dig it out of my my treasure trove in the old attic.
He'll be selling that on his eBay.
Just really tweet Kai once again.
A decade later, yeah.
I've never said the wrong city, but you guys will remember this. I've said the wrong state before with the correct city.
Oh,
I don't know if you guys remember when we were, I think it was at the Cargo in Reno, and I said Reno, California.
Oh my God.
Who does and that?
I don't know. I have no clue.
Right.
Exactly. Like, I've never, ever thought Reno was in California. I've been here my whole life. Obviously, Reno is in Nevada, but brain fart, middle of the song, like shouting out the city you're in. And I made sure I had the city right, but I just totally botched on the state, which was really funny.
What's up, Denver, Hawaii? Drop a Hawaii.
I'm surprised nobody said Janice.
Yeah.
Janice is fun too.
Honorable mention, Janice, for sure.
Janice is cool, yeah.
Janice is super fun.
There's got to be
there's a lot of cool, really cool venues out there. I mean, we could name 100 of them, but no, we're just going for the tippies.
All right, it's now time for our newest segment called Mr. Operator, where we answer your questions on the air. If you want to have your question read and answered on the air, text or call us anytime at 805-225-6886. That goes directly to Adam Taylor. Give him a call any time of the hour. And also starting today, the Uplifter podcast is now accepting voice memos. So if you don't want to call anybody or text it, you can send a recording of your question or a comment to podcast@irationmusic.com and we will play it on our show. Again, that's podcast@irationmusic.com. Our question today was texted to our Mr. Operator hotline. And the question is, what songs were you guys really stoked about before they were released that didn't end up being fan favorites? And what were some songs that were surprise fan favorites? Who wants to start? MB? Adam?
Adam looks like he's really chomping at the bit here.
Okay, I really thought... and I mean, people do love this song, but Go That Road, I was like absolutely certain it was going to be a hit. And I know people do love it, but it's just one that kind of just, you know, went a little bit down the pipe and didn't really become a set list mandatory must play. But to this day, I think that's one of my favorites to even like listen to. I mean, I don't listen to much of our music, but I do like that song.
But I respect that you're making it.
Exactly. I'd like to pass this on to Joe.
I'm not ready.
Okay, I would like to pass the mic to MB.
I think one that I thought might have been more of like had more of a response would probably be something like Too Good to Be True, just because it was like fun to listen to, and the whole time the process of making it, all of our personal like circle of family and people that we were close to all gave us a lot of really positive feedback on that one. But yeah, I think it just, maybe we just didn't play it enough live for people to like grasp onto it. But that one was one that I thought would be more of a fan favorite. But you know, that album had 17 songs. So it's like, you can only have so many fan favorites when you put out that many songs. So I think that one might've been a victim to just like being in this kind of big pool of songs for everybody to choose from. And there was obviously other standouts, Stay the Course and Already Gold and those songs that just were more kind of Iration sounding songs. So I would say that one.
Kason, do you have any?
Yeah, I have two that were both Kai Boy songs. First is Work It Out, which I still really like that song. But it never really caught on. And then the other one was Porcupine. You guys remember Porcupine?
Oh my God. Yeah.
I was going to say that too.
At that point in our career, we were trying to get a song on K-Rock, and we were kind of going towards a more rock and roll sort of vibe, I guess. And we made that song, and I personally thought it was going to be a radio hit on alternative rock radio. And we made a video for it, a music video that we were not in at all. And it was not quite so well received by our fans. But still a good song, I think.
I still don't think I've seen that video.
The video promotes some questionable...
It's online still. Behavior.
The response was somewhat prickly.
What about you, Joe? Have you figured it out yet?
Yes. Okay, so Borderlines and Hit List, maybe? It's a couple. I mean, I personally liked both songs, but we tried to play them live a bunch, and they kind of did okay. And then, you know, obviously just the style, I don't think really translated with our fan base.
Poosh, do you have any?
I would say Borderlines is one that I still think is a really strong song. Maybe it's a little bit outside of the Iration realm for some people that they maybe hear it and they don't necessarily think, oh, that's an Iration song. But I think if that was maybe another band playing that song, it would have had a little bit more legs. I love that song. I think it's really strong. Overall, it's got a good beat. It's got a cool hook. That was one. The other one I could maybe think about was like Show Me. Originally, it was a Kai song that was supposed to be Kai singing the lead vocal. And then when he left the band, we had to recut it. So then we kind of were in a rush. Maybe would have changed it up slightly and tried to, you know, maybe doctor it a little bit more and maybe tailor it to my vocal a little bit more if we had more time. But I always thought that was a really good song that had a lot of potential with Lincoln. We worked with Lincoln on that one, Lincoln Parrish, and he played that guitar riff on it that I always thought was really infectious. That da 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 da. It's like the na 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 na. So yeah, I think those were two. I mean, there's obviously a bunch. Like Home was another song too that I thought had some potential. But
what do you think about High Flying too? That was one I kind of thought had such a strong hook, but didn't really. We never played it live or anything.
Yeah, it's just a weird song. I mean, some of them were just kind of awkward to play live, and they became like these kind of culty with our fan base. Like, they really are popular. And in those days, we were just kind of locked into what we were playing. You know, we were playing a lot of like 30 and 45 minute sets. We weren't doing a whole lot of headlining. So it was like, if you take put one of those songs in, you got to pull something else that's probably a stronger song per se, or maybe more suited to what the live set was going for with energy, as far as energy goes. So, I mean, now it's like if somebody wants to hear a song in general, we could probably fit it in somewhere. I mean, even now it's hard to pull songs out, you know, once we get locked into a 90-minute set. But, you know, it's just one of those things. You just never know. And I think a lot of the reasons why our fan base, you know, doesn't necessarily click with the song is that it may be the song stylistically is outside of what people are, you know, used to hearing from Iration. You know, they want to hear something that's a little more in the fitting into the Time Bomb. You know, if they started with us with Time Bomb, or, you know, even earlier before that, or, you know, they want to hear something that kind of fits into that realm. It's like if, you know, when you hear Jack Johnson has essentially made like a lot of the same sounding albums like over and over again. If he did a song that came out and it sounded like more dance or something like that, people would be like,
slow down, Jackie.
Slow down, JJ. Slow down,
you know
JJ
what I
Stokes.
Thought was going to be a real hit was intro skit on No Time for Rest.
Yeah, hello?
Welcome to Jack and the Dirty. I'm Mike. Would you like to try a triple moo burger with bacon?
Hey, Kai, give me number 5.
Okay.
Number 5, bro.
Yeah, could I get one number 5?
One number 5.
So one number 5.
Okay. One number 5.
Double G.
Adams.
Three.
Not a double G?
Three breakfast burritos.
Three breakfast burritos. Okay. Shut
up. Okay, three breakfast burritos.
All right.
Okay.
Cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger.
Number 3 with a Coke.
Number three with a Coke. All right, yeah.
Get my nuggets. Hey.
Wait, Joe. All right.
Hey, bibimbap.
All right. We don't serve that.
And, gotta get my
and we're going to get
chicken nuggets.
And one more chicken nugget. And a chocolate shake.
Chicken nuggets. All right.
Egg rolls.
And egg rolls.
No, King. That's enough.
That's it. That's good.
Egg rolls. Beautiful. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Your total is going to be 74.40. Please pull forward.
Hey, Rick. Throw the special sauce in this order.
double chi.
Yeah, I would probably pay somebody to just wipe that clean from existence if we could now.
We actually use studio time and money to rig a microphone and bring it outside and pull the van up and back, like, and do all this. Like,
we tracked literally every sound.
Like, what were we doing?
Well, we had no idea what we were doing, and we were wasting a lot of time and money.
Friends that were really excited for our first, like, real full-length album, when they put in the CD and heard that right off the bat, they're just like, you're a joke to me. Like,
like, what are you? What about this album?
What about the opposite? Songs that you didn't think would hit so well when you played it live, but when you did, it was just like, everyone just kept asking for it.
I thought all were going to hit live.
Well, Time Bomb was kind of a slow burn. It wasn't like a hit right off the bat. I don't think it really started to gain traction until, you know, a year after we released the album, Time Bomb. Just the song Time Bomb, I mean. And then, yeah, I think it took us playing it a lot to get the crowd on board. And it has slowly become one of our best songs.
Did you say a slow burn, Kason Musgraves?
Slow burn.
I'm all right with the slow burn.
Maybe Reelin' too. I feel like maybe Reelin' was one that, like, we didn't expect to just become more of like a set staple. I don't know. At least, I guess that was like my first experience in the band, and I felt like it was pretty rock heavy. But I know that was coming after like Background, so there was definitely precedent for it. But I figured maybe more of the, like, obviously Lost and Found's a big favorite. I thought that one was more going to be, like, for sure a fan favorite, but not necessarily maybe Reelin' or...
I would say maybe Turn Around would be one that I was pretty surprised that of how well it really did. I mean, it would pretty much broke us in the radio with 91X just because it kind of breaks a lot of the rules. It has this repeating verse. It was a little bit outside of the realm of what we're doing up to then. You know, it had a up-tempo beat, a little bit more of a rocky vibe on the song, not necessarily reggae. But yeah, it's still to this day is kind of a mainstay in the set, and people love it when they hear it. I think it's just the whole vibe, the beat of it is infectious.
Anybody have anything else to add?
I was going to ask, what about, like, off the songs on this new album that aren't out yet, which ones do you guys think will be fan favorites, or that, you know, only time will tell if that's the case or not?
I'm really looking forward to, I know it's just been put out, but I'm really looking forward to playing Move Forward live. I just love the way it builds and when the hook hits. Like, I feel like that's going to be a really fun one for the audience and for us as musicians to play.
Yeah, I think it'll have a definite vibe. You know, it'll be a part of the set where there's a little bit of an emotion to that song. I would say I think Guava Lane is going to be a very popular song just because it is right down the pipe. It's a reggae song, and having Ellie Mack on it, it hits the nostalgia vibe. You know, it's about growing up, you know, and in Hawaii, and I think a lot of people are going to be able to vibe with the story and the song as well, and Ellie Mack kills it, and it's a dope reggae song. It kind of fits into that realm of like Dream or Summer Nights. So I think people will really react to that one.
I'm excited for Guava Lane as well. I actually played it to a couple of my friends when I was back in Hawaii. I played it for Ed.
You what?
Who's a hunter, and he's like, that's where we go hunt. Guava Lane.
Fun story about Ed, too, is whenever Jody wasn't around, Ed was the go-to fill-in drummer for a while. Like, I always enjoyed jamming with him.
Good drummer. And a hunter.
Stony
Pants. Thank you, boys, for all coming on the show today. We will see you guys next week. And to all of the listeners out there, thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Uplifter. Don't forget to subscribe and rate this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. We hope you all stay safe out there. And remember, when the news gets you down, you can always tune in to The Uplifter.
Uplifter.
Ah. You are one pathetic loser.
Yeah, I'm coasting. Nothing in the world could ever take this from me. Alive with the feeling that your loving gives me. I'm coasting. Yeah, I'm coasting. No one can interrupt my groove today. Been watching gray skies move away. I just don't think that I can lose. And I might just take a cruise and let the sunshine play. Something more, something new, something you get attracted to. That light that shines on water.